I hope this is coming across clear because it's a little staticky on our side. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, can you hear us all right? Because you're coming through really scratchy up here. It's raining pretty hard.
Sounds okay.
Okay, all right, good. So we thought we'd talk about the different methods of holding real estate title because you can hold your primary residence or investment property in a lot of different ways, and the way you hold it may affect certain things that happen in your life. So I thought that might be a good conversation to have. I know Bill's got a couple of deals he's dealing with right now, and I've had it happen on some real estate transactions lately. Anyhow.
What have you had happen?
Now, I have to think. I had it all in my head a couple days ago, and now it's, once you start talking, it will all come back.
It's gone?
Actually, when a couple isn't married, or they, you know, the way they hold title makes a difference. And we talk about that when we write the purchase agreement.
Yeah.
And that's happening a lot where somebody is, they're either going to get married.
They're in a relationship.
But they're not married. Right. Yeah. I was trying to think of the diplomatic way of putting it.
Why? What undiplomatic way was there?
Well, I don't know.
Living together?
I don't know.
Yeah, two people that are unmarried that want to reside together, whether it's two men, two women, or a man and a woman. I mean, you got to think about how.
Or it could be, yeah. And it could be mom and daughter, type of relationship going on here.
Yeah, I agree. So which one you want to start with?
Well, the list is joint tenancy, tenancy in common, tenants by entirety. There's sole ownership and community property. We don't have community property, though, in Michigan, do we?
We do not have community property in Michigan. We did for 9 months in 1957, and it was repealed. So we do not have community
property. Why was it repealed?
I have no idea. I really wasn't practicing law in 1957.
Oh, you would have been how old? 10. Were you even thinking about it?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. All right. Well, I wasn't even born in 1957, so I certainly wasn't.
So the most important thing is that you really need to talk with someone, with a lawyer. When you're acquiring property with someone who is not your spouse, you need to talk to a lawyer to find out what is really the way you want to hold the title to the property, because there are different consequences.
So let's talk about what the different consequences are. Let's say husband and wife, that's automatically a certain type of title, correct?
In Michigan, where title is granted or given to husband and wife, it is presumptively tenancy by the entirety. The law treats the marriage as an entity that holds, or is an entirety, that holds the title as the marriage, so that when one spouse dies, the other spouse is now the sole owner. That's tenancy by the entirety.
Is that only... So this can even go even further, right? Is it only up to a certain dollar amount that the property goes to the...
No, that has not... You're talking about the case I have where property was held by one spouse. The personal residence was held by one spouse. That spouse dies. Now the surviving spouse inherits... excuse me. There's no will. So the property passes by the laws of intestacy. And that's the absolute worst thing that could happen to a surviving spouse, assuming that the spouses have had a conversation about this, or assume that the property was going to go to the surviving spouse.
If you're married, you want to do a quick claim deed. If you own the property and then you and I got married and you own the property by sole ownership, we get married, you want to do a quick claim deed as joint tenants.
Well, you're making a pretty bold assumption there that I actually wanted the property to go to you upon my death.
Well, I'm certain you would. So.
Well, we've been married 30 years, so you're correct in that assumption. But there are plenty of, later in life marriages where the spouses don't want their estates or their assets, their home property, to go to the surviving spouse. They need to consult with an estate planning lawyer and talk to that lawyer to find out what she recommends in terms of doing an estate plan. But let's just assume that it's husband and wife, If a husband owns property in his own name, he gets married, and he wants that property to go to his surviving spouse, then that husband needs to now do a quick claim deed to himself and his wife. And if he just says, John Smith to John and Mary Smith, husband and wife, automatically it converts to a tenancy by the entirety upon his death or upon her death. The property, the title is held by the surviving spouse. Where parties are husband and wife and they acquire a property, they take it as husband and wife, don't need to say it's tenancy by the entirety. Automatically, the law presumes it's tenancy by the entirety. However, you got to keep in mind that if a husband and wife don't want the property to be held as tenancy by the entirety, they have every right to do a deed that provides for some other method of ownership.
So you and I get married. I have my two children. You have your four children. And you want your part of the property to go to your four kids. I want my part of the property to go to my two kids. How would I hold my, how would the title be held?
Yeah, and now you're talking about something that's more complicated. Now you're talking about setting up two separate trusts, grantor trust for me, grantor trust for you, different assets placed into those trusts so that upon the death of that particular grantor, the assets of that trust would go to, in your case, if it was your trust, it would go to your kids. In the case of my trust,
right, but what would the title, how would that be? Joint tenancy, tenancy in common?
It would be neither.
Really?
Yeah, because we'd have to set it up so that the title, what we might set up is so that upon my death, it would provide.
Well, let's assume we're not married then, because obviously the marriage is complicating things.
No, but let me just tell you that the way you would set it up is that if it was my property, we got married. Again, we're assuming it's a little later in life. Now, what I want is I want you to have a life estate. You can continue to reside in the property that's our residence that I brought to the marriage. If I owned it, I brought it to the marriage. Now we get married. I provide that the property is held in my trust, my grantor trust, and it provides that upon my death, you will continue to be able to reside in that property for the rest of your life. Then upon your death, the property would go to my kids. But now you're getting really far afield. You would want to go to a let me finish. You want to go to a qualified estate planning lawyer. I'm not that lawyer. I do real estate. I'm just giving you sort of the thumbnail here. You want, when you die, even though you're not married, do you want your interest to go to your other person, the other person that you're buying the property with? If you say yes, then you can say, okay, let's do joint tenants. We can do it by a will, but we're not going to do that. We don't want it to go through probate. So what we do is we set up joint tenants. Now the next question is, okay, there are two kinds of joint tenants in Michigan. There's joint tenancy, nothing else, and then there's joint tenancy with full right of survivorship. The difference is this. This young couple that's getting that's buying the house, they're not married. The question is, do you want to be able to, if this relationship breaks apart, do you want to be able to sell your interest? Do you want to be able to compel a sale of the property? That's straight joint tenancy, because in a straight joint tenancy, I can sever the joint tenancy and convert it to another form of ownership, which is tenancy in common. So my recommendation to most couples who aren't married, who are buying a property, have a serious conversation about whether or not you want the property to go to the other person upon your death, even though you're not married. If the answer to that question is yes, then that's joint tenants with full right of survivorship, which also is still joint tenancy. But the difference is, in a joint tenancy with full right of survivorship, I can't get out of it without the consent of the other person. I can't convert it to a tenancy in common. It's going to remain joint tenants with full right of survivorship. Even a court can't partition the right of survivorship. Court can partition the right of possession during the lifetime, et cetera. That's getting a little complicated.
Right.
The point here is joint tenants with full right of survivorship, you better be fully committed to that relationship because there's no way you can get out of it. Even better is for the parties who are not married, buying the property, take it as joint tenants so that you've got a right of survivorship. There's no need to go through probate. But do a joint tenancy agreement that says what happens in the event the relationship breaks up. Usually it's one party makes an offer to the other to either buy or sell at a particular price. Then the other party has the right to say, I'll sell it or you can buy it. That's a very common, fairly straightforward joint tenancy agreement.
Well, I've never heard you talk about that before.
It's surprising, isn't it?
It is. It is. All right, and so what is, when would I use tenancy in common?
Anytime you're buying property with somebody else and you're not setting it up in the form of an LLC, we're rarely using tenancy in common these days. If I'm buying property with somebody else that I'm not in a relationship with, we're just making an investment in property, we're typically not going to buy as tenants in common, because you still have to do a tenancy in common agreement. You're better off doing an LLC, buying property for purposes of investment. You're also insulating yourself from potential liability for things that happen on the property, so you'd set up an LLC. And then each party would own 50% of the LLC. You'd do an operating agreement that provided for what happens in the event one party wants to get out and the other doesn't, and that's really how you would end up holding property. Rarely do we see tenancy in common in these states.
And if I'm a corporation, what are the different forms of holding title?
Well, no, you just mentioned one way of holding title, corporation.
Yeah, you're right. It's all right if I'm a business.
Yeah, but we don't use corporations much anymore, simply because back in, when did we create the LLC statute? In the 1970s, early 80s. I haven't formed a corporation in years. Formed tons of real estate LLCs. Matter of fact, I'm in the process of forming LLCs for a client, an umbrella LLC that's going to hold all of the membership interests in the sub-LLCs, which are each going to own the individual properties. This is done for liability purposes.
Right. Okay. I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah, right. So LLC is a great device. If you're buying property with somebody else, if you're not in a personal relationship with, I'd typically use an LLC and then do an operating agreement.
And then who can sign on transferring the property? So how do you determine who can transfer the property?
In the operating agreement will say who has the authority. Who has the authority to sell the assets of the entity. Typically, and let's suppose it's just two people in the LLC, you'd need the consent of the other person. And if they're not going to consent, then you set up a mechanism again for dissolution of the LLC or buying out of the interest of the other. Again, it's just part of the operating agreement.
Well, if you have an LLC, though, you have to have more than one person.
No, not at all. I can have a single
person. But on your tax returns, then it just goes. I mean, our CPA
says that it's all a pass-through. LLC is a pass-through. It's a non-entity for tax purposes. You can actually elect it to have tax consequences, but one of the benefits of the LLC is it gives you limited liability of a corporation, but you have pass-through for taxes like a sub-S corporation, except it's not a corporation. It's a lot easier to manage, to set up, to deal with. LLC is just the way to go.
Is there a difference between, what's the difference between a corporation and a partnership?
It's huge.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
General partners are liable, jointly and severally liable for all the debts and obligations of the partnership. So there's personal liability on the part of the general partners. Corporation, no personal liability of the owners of the corporation. They're insulated from liability, limited liability. The only time they have liabilities is if they actually committed an act or a deliberate act or an act of omission, a negligence that caused some injury. But that's why you hold stock in a corporation. That's why you hold a membership interest in an LLC, is the limited liability. General partnership, you're a general partner, you got liability for the obligations of the partnership. Limited partners don't have, if it's a limited partnership as opposed to a general partnership, limited partners do not have liability for the debts and obligations unless they start engaging in the acts normally associated with general partner. So, yeah, you got general partnership, you got limited partnership, you got a C corporation, which is now a pass-through entity. It's taxed as a separate entity. You got a sub-S corporation, which has a pass-through for taxes. It's not a taxable entity for most purposes. Then you've got LLC, where you typically elect it's not going to be a taxable entity. Everything passes through. Then you got ownership, tenancy in common. You got ownership, joint tenancy. You got ownership, joint tenancy with full right of survivorship. You've got ownership by trust, just a grantor trust typically. You even have family trust, which is now a recognized form of trust. And a family limited partnership. Often the cottage may be owned by a family limited partnership, in which the limited partners are the members of the family who share the use of a cottage in northern Michigan to get away from COVID-19.
Is that what you do? What about a nonprofit? Are they structured the same way as, I mean, are they corporations or partnerships or nonprofits?
Yeah, nonprofit can be structured in a number of ways. I don't do eleemosynary law, which is nonprofit or charitable law, but you can set it up as an association. You can set it up as a corporation. Typically, it'll be a nonprofit corporation.
Is that a phone call or is that a text
note?
No, it's
not. You better make sure Greg's still with us.
Maybe. Well, let's double check this. I don't see anything from him.
Greg, are you there?
Yeah.
He texted that we had 2 minutes.
All right, go for it.
So there was something else. Oh, what if I want to claim a primary residence? Let's say you and Adam, your son, buy property together, and he needs your name on there because you've got the money and he doesn't. He doesn't have to own 100% of the property, right? He can just have 1% share in order to claim primary residence?
I'd have to look at the DRE statute on that one. I don't know off the top of my head. You can hold the residence in your own name. You can hold it in a trust. You can't hold it in an LLC because the PRE, personal residence exemption statute, there's just a case on that, so it can't be an LLC. I don't know if you have to hold more, 50% or more of the.
And in these,
I'd check the statute.
And in these titles, can you own less than 50%?
Only in tenancy and common. If it's two people in a joint tenancy, by definition of a joint tenancy, they'll each own 50%. If it's a tenancy in common, it could be any percentage.
Okay.
In an LLC, it could be any percentage.
Right. I'm sure somebody will correct us if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that you can own, Adam could have 1% as long as his name's on the title and claim PRE in that house.
You're much more confident on the law on that point than I am because I haven't looked at the statute on that issue.
I'll
look at it and tell you the answer later today.
Okay. All right. Well, it looks like we're running out of time, so I would like to encourage anyone who wants to sell their home to give me a call. It's a great market for selling, and it's a great market for buying because interest rates are below 3%. And I would love to help you with your real estate needs. And we also have a couple of houses for rent if you're looking for a place where someone else takes care of the lawn and the snow. That would be us. So call Laura Schlechte, 780-3800.